Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day.
Welcome back, and thanks as always for listening. With the fall, oral boards in surgical oncology, colorectal, vascular, and general surgery fast approaching, we want to remind you to check out the study resources at behindtheknife.org. Each of our oral board audio review series contain carefully crafted scenarios designed to help you dominate the board. Each scenario includes two parts. The first is a perfectly executed back and forth between examiner and examinee that mimics the real thing. Scenarios are 5 to 7 minutes long and include a variety of tactics and styles. If you're able to achieve this level of performance in your preparation, you are sure to pass the oral boards with flying colors. Now, the second part introduces high-yield commentary to each scenario. This commentary includes tips and tricks to help you dominate the most challenging scenarios, in addition to practical, easy-to-understand teaching that covers the most confusing topics we face as surgeons. We are confident you will find this unique, dual format approach a highly effective way to prepare for your boards. Again, check out behindtheknife.org for more. We hope you enjoy the case.
Behind the Knife Premium.
Case 1. Asymptomatic carotid stenosis.
A 72-year-old man with a distant history of smoking is being followed for carotid artery stenosis. He denies any history of stroke or TIAs. He's on an aspirin and a high-dose statin. Carotid artery duplex shows a greater than 70% stenosis of his left internal carotid artery with a peak systolic velocity of 350 centimeters per second and diastolic velocity of 145 centimeters per second and an ICA to CCA ratio of 4.5. He's able to walk a mile without shortness of breath. He has no cardiac history and he has had no prior surgeries or radiation to his neck. How would you proceed?
So I would start by performing a physical exam focusing on cranial nerves, motor strength and bilateral extremities, and signs of aphasia.
Your physical exam is negative for any of these abnormalities.
Given the high peak systolic velocity and end diastolic velocity, I would diagnose the patient with asymptomatic high-grade carotid artery stenosis. I would discuss the risks and benefits of a carotid endarterectomy with him versus optimal medical management. He meets the threshold where carotid endarterectomy is thought to be beneficial in an asymptomatic patient in reducing his stroke risk over the next 5 years.
So what would you quote this patient's stroke risk at 1 year with optimal medical management and after a carotid endarterectomy?
In patients with greater than 80% asymptomatic carotid artery stenosis that have a life expectancy greater than 3 years, the stroke risk is reduced by half from 2% per year to 1% per year after endarterectomy.
So the patient states his father had a stroke and he has seen how devastating this can be. He would like to proceed with surgery. Is there any testing you would want prior to operating on him?
Yeah, as part of his preoperative workup, I would obtain a CTA of the head and neck to further delineate the anatomy. As he is an otherwise healthy, active individual with no prior cardiac history, I would only obtain an EKG and echo. If these tests are normal, I would proceed with a left carotid endarterectomy.
What type of neuromonitoring do you use and why?
I routinely use EEG for neuromonitoring during carotid surgery.
What are the benefits and pitfalls of using EEG monitoring?
It's a very accurate modality, but it can be labor and resource intensive and has a high rate of false positives.
Okay. Take me through your surgery.
So I would start with preoperative placement of EEG leads for neuromonitoring. After general anesthesia, I would extend the neck to the right and place a shoulder roll. I would make a longitudinal incision along the anterior border of the sternocleidomastoid, divide the platysma, and retract the internal jugular laterally. I would then divide the facial vein, identify the common carotid artery and vagus nerve, and dissect internal and external carotid artery, watching for the hypoglossal nerve. Heparinize the patient with 80 to 100 units per kilo, wait for an ACT greater than 250 seconds, and clamp the internal, common, then external carotid arteries. I would make a longitudinal arteriotomy and endarterectomy, creating a smooth distal endpoint. Then tack down any flaps and complete the patch angioplasty. Flushing maneuvers prior to patch completion would be done, and then remove clamps in reverse order. I would perform a completion study with the intraoperative duplex ultrasound to confirm lack of intraluminal debris, no increased velocities, a low resistance waveform of the internal and a high resistance waveform of the external carotid artery. I would then close the platysma and skin once hemostasis is achieved. I would then maintain systolic pressures of 100 to 160 and perform a full neuro exam prior to leaving the operating theater.
What findings on the completion duplex would warrant a further investigation at the time?
If I see intraluminal debris greater than 2 millimeters or peak systolic velocity greater than 200 centimeters per second or high resistance waveforms in the ICA or a visible flap at the distal endpoint would prompt me to reopen.
He wakes up and has a normal neuro exam in the OR, but after an hour in the PACU, he develops a dense right hemiplegia and slurring of his speech. They call you emergently to evaluate him.
So first, I would notify the OR that I plan to perform an emergent take back. While they are preparing, I would get a stat duplex of his carotid artery. I would also ask anesthesia to raise his blood pressure to near 160.
The duplex shows a thrombosed carotid bifurcation. What are you going to do?
I would fully heparinize the patient and plan for a reoperation with thrombectomy.
You're back in the OR. Describe your thrombectomy.
First, I would confirm full heparinization. Then I would reopen the prior incision. I would control the common carotid, external carotid, and internal carotid arteries. I would clamp the common carotid artery, then the external carotid artery, and I would not clamp the internal carotid artery. I would open the patch and allow the thrombus to wash out with back bleeding. I would carefully pass a number 2 Fogarty embolectomy catheter distally, no further than the tragus of the ear to ensure no residual debris. I would then evaluate for technical defects and repair that is needed.
So you do that, the internal carotid artery back bleeds nicely once the thrombus is removed, and there's a flap at the distal endpoint. How are you going to address this?
I would extend my patch opening to allow better visualization of the defect and perform an interrupted tacking suture of the flap.
Be sure to listen to Part B for high yield commentary and other tips and tricks. Behind the Knife Premium.
Case 1. Asymptomatic carotid stenosis.
A 72-year-old man with a distant history of smoking is being followed for carotid artery stenosis. He denies any history of stroke or TIAs. He's on an aspirin and a high-dose statin. Carotid artery duplex shows a greater than 70% stenosis of his left internal carotid artery with a peak systolic velocity of 350 centimeters per second and diastolic velocity of 145 centimeters per second and an ICA to CCA ratio of 4.5. He's able to walk a mile without shortness of breath. He has no cardiac history and he has had no prior surgeries or radiation to his neck. How would you proceed?
So I would start by performing a physical exam focusing on cranial nerves, motor strength and bilateral extremities, and signs of aphasia.
When evaluating a patient with carotid artery stenosis, a thorough physical exam is key. Patients should be asked about their hand dominance, and an examination for symmetry in all the cranial nerve distributions should be performed. Motor and sensory function, as well as speech, can also be affected with a stroke or transient ischemic attack. Lastly, ensuring the patient has never had these symptoms before helps you distinguish between an asymptomatic and symptomatic patient. Your physical exam is negative for any of these abnormalities.
Given the high peak systolic velocity and end diastolic velocity, I would diagnose the patient with asymptomatic high-grade carotid artery stenosis. I would discuss the risks and benefits of a carotid endarterectomy with him versus optimal medical management. He meets the threshold where carotid endarterectomy is thought to be beneficial in an asymptomatic patient and reducing his stroke risk over the next 5 years.
So what would you quote this patient's stroke risk at 1 year with optimal medical management and after a carotid endarterectomy?
In patients with greater than 80% asymptomatic carotid artery stenosis that have a life expectancy greater than 3 years, the stroke risk is reduced by half from 2% per year to 1% per year after endarterectomy.
Differentiating between asymptomatic and symptomatic carotid disease is key in this scenario. The stroke rate in symptomatic patients is significantly higher, historically quoted at 26% at 2 years, compared to that in an asymptomatic patient. For asymptomatic patients, the stroke risk is about 11% at 5 years, and with surgery, that rate is reduced to 5.5%. Several duplex criteria exist for determining the degree of stenosis. Generally speaking, three criteria are evaluated on any duplex. These are peak systolic velocity, end diastolic velocity, and ICA to CCA peak systolic velocity ratio. In this scenario, a peak systolic velocity greater than 230 centimeters per second and end diastolic velocity greater than 100 centimeters per second and a ratio greater than 4 correlates with a greater than 70% stenosis. Furthermore, as the end diastolic velocity is greater than 140 centimeters per second, this patient can be classified as having a greater than 80% stenosis. So the patient states his father had a stroke, and he has seen how devastating this can be. He would like to proceed with surgery. Is there any testing you would want prior to operating on him?
Yeah, as part of his preoperative workup, I would obtain a CTA of the head and neck to further delineate the anatomy. As he is an otherwise healthy, active individual with no prior cardiac history, I would only obtain an EKG and echo. If these tests are normal, I would proceed with a left carotid endarterectomy.
Although you could operate on someone with velocity criteria showing a high-grade stenosis, a CTA can give you a key anatomic details that can guide your dissection, extent of disease, and the amount of calcification. In the case of very high anatomic lesions, this may affect your decision-making regarding the treatment modality in terms of performing an endarterectomy or stenting procedure. What type of neuromonitoring do you use and why?
I routinely use EEG for neuromonitoring during carotid surgery.
What are the benefits and pitfalls of using EEG monitoring?
It's a very accurate modality, but can be labor and resource intensive and has a high rate of false positives.
Neuromonitoring and neuroprotection are frequently asked on the boards as there are many ways to approach these two topics during a carotid operation. The key takeaway is to know how to shunt and be ready to defend whichever, if any, neuromonitoring or neuroprotection strategy you choose. There is no right or wrong answer, but they all have pros and cons. Okay, take me through your surgery.
So I would start with preoperative placement of EEG leads for neuromonitoring. After general anesthesia, I would extend the neck to the right and place a shoulder roll. I would make a longitudinal incision along the anterior border of the sternocleidomastoid, divide the platysma, and retract the internal jugular laterally. I would then divide the facial vein, identify the common carotid artery and vagus nerve, and dissect internal and external carotid artery, watching for the hypoglossal nerve. Heparinize the patient with 80 to 100 units per kilo, wait for an ACT greater than 250 seconds, and clamp the internal, common, then external carotid arteries. I would make a longitudinal arteriotomy and endarterectomy, creating a smooth distal endpoint. Then tack down any flaps and complete the patch angioplasty. Flushing maneuvers prior to patch completion would be done, and then remove clamps in reverse order. I would perform a completion study with the intraoperative duplex ultrasound to confirm lack of intraluminal debris, no increased velocities, a low resistance waveform of the internal and a high resistance waveform of the external carotid artery. I would then close the platysma and scan once hemostasis is achieved. I would then maintain systolic pressures of 100 to 160 and perform a full neuro exam prior to leaving the operating theater.
What findings on the completion duplex would warrant a further investigation at the time?
If I see intraluminal debris greater than 2 millimeters or peak systolic velocity greater than 200 centimeters per second or high resistance waveforms in the ICA or a visible flap at the distal endpoint would prompt me to reopen.
Completion imaging is another area where you can be taken down several paths. Once again, the main test-taking strategy is to have a pathway you follow and to know how to defend it. Completion imaging can be in the form of listening with a continuous wave Doppler probe, using imaging with duplex ultrasound, or cerebral angiography. If you see any significant abnormalities on duplex or angiogram, the next step should be to reopen the patch and fix the defect you found. He wakes up and has a normal neuro exam in the OR, but after an hour in the PACU, he develops a dense right hemiplegia and slurring of his speech. They call you emergently to evaluate him.
So first, I would notify the OR that I plan to perform an emergent take back. While they're preparing, I would get a stat duplex fist carotid artery. I would also ask anesthesia to raise his blood pressure to near 160.
As long as you mention you are planning on re-operating on this patient, it is safe to ask for a duplex while the OR is being set up. The error here is going for a head CT to look for a stroke as the patient has a clear neurologic exam change. The duplex shows a thrombosed carotid bifurcation. What are you going to do?
I would fully heparinize the patient and plan for a reoperation with thrombectomy.
You're back in the OR. Describe your thrombectomy.
First, I would confirm full heparinization. Then I would reopen the prior incision. I would control the common carotid, external carotid, and internal carotid arteries. I would clamp the common carotid artery, then the external carotid artery, and I would not clamp the internal carotid artery. I would open the patch and allow the thrombus to wash out with back bleeding. I would carefully pass a number 2 Fogarty embolectomy catheter distally, no further than the tragus of the ear to ensure no residual debris. I would then evaluate for technical defects and repair that is needed.
So you do that. The internal carotid artery back bleeds nicely once the thrombus is removed, and there's a flap at the distal endpoint. How are you going to address this?
I would extend my patch opening to allow better visualization of the defect and perform an interrupted tacking suture of the flap.
Heparinizing the patient and raising the blood pressure are good steps to employ immediately. While performing a thrombectomy, never clamp the internal carotid artery, as this can propagate clot more distally. Passing an embolectomy catheter can assist in removing any remaining clot, but the sizing of the balloon is important. A rare complication that you can be challenged with, if you use too large of a balloon, is a carotid cavernous sinus fistula. This presents clinically as a bulging of the eye that is pulsatile.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Knife Premium Oral Board Review. Dominate the day.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.